Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
What a great place to talk about change here in Las Vegas. If you have seen it while you flew into the city and you saw the desert and the mountains, and then you saw the city itself, to witness this transformation from a desert of rocks and sand into a desert of, well, slot machines and concrete. I guess it's probably the best place to have such a presentation. And this presentation is about big change. It's about organizational change. It's not just about deploying the next Exchange client or Outlook client. It's about transforming your organization into something that hopefully helps you to address your problems and the problems to come tomorrow even better. My name is Christoph Recknagel, and you might have already noticed I'm from Boston. I'm with the Boston Consulting Group. I joined the company about 7-8 years ago, and I'm from Germany. I started there in local support. I moved up the ranks, first taking on a management role for Germany in the support area, and then moving into project management, infrastructure, applications. And about 1.5 years ago, I had the pleasure to join a project that was about identifying a new organization for us and a better way to structure how we would provide IT support. And this was truly exciting. And for me, certainly it was, on a personal side, also beneficial. I'm now the IT service director. I have about 110 people in our organization reporting to me. And we have about 60 offices. We are represented in about 38 countries. We support internally a user base of about 5,000 people. And most of them are traveling users. About two-thirds of our clients are notebooks. One-third are desktops. And certainly our consultants are very demanding users. And what we moved from was in the past was from a local organization. Then about 5 years ago, we transformed into a regional organization. And now it's time for us to transform into a global organization. And this presentation is about this attempt. And I don't want to lie to you. It's going well in some areas, and we are struggling in other areas. I would say, bottom line, we're not as far as we hoped we would be today. And we certainly had a lot of problems, I would say, and we also did a number of mistakes when it came to addressing people issues in this transformation. Our people went over the past 15 months through a lot of worrying about their jobs, about the future, about how IT support would work in our organization, and I also want to talk a little bit about this. This slide describes, it's for the recording, it's slide number 3. That's about the regional structure that we had. We had offices in the Americas, in Europe, and in Asia. And IT support was managed by, I would refer to them as mini CIOs in those regions. So these people pretty much were in control of all the IT resources, whether it's IT support, applications development, or infrastructure. And a question to you guys, how many are currently operating in such an environment? Okay. For the others, what kind of environments are you working in? Are you more in global organizations or still in local organizations? Transition? Okay.
We have a global organization, but at those global sites, typically we have a host division. So there may be multiple divisions within the country, but one of those divisions will host, and that division generally takes care of IT.
Okay. Good, so mix.
We're a local and a regional, and we're trying to get to a global.
Okay, so also in the process of transforming. Okay, great. The problems we faced in this organizational structure had a lot to do with cultural differences. Pretty much the Europeans were doing what they wanted, the Americans were doing what they wanted, and the Asians, they pretty much followed wherever they felt had the best idea. Also to understand that Asia-Pacific was at the time and still is our smallest region. We have about 700 users in Asia-Pacific. 50% of our users and our business is in Europe, and about 30% is in the Americas. Now, because we had directors in each region, and they all had their own agenda, there was very little sharing. It was always a struggle to put through global projects. And at some point in time, that was about 2 years ago, our company got a new CEO, and Hans-Paul Bergner had a vision for our company. And this vision was transforming to a global organization and creating global functions, leverage our strengths in all regions, and really make the best out of it, sharing best practices. And not doing this only in IT, but also doing this in finance, HR, and our core business, the consultant business itself. So IT was challenged with this task, and I would say we lived up to this expectation, not fully voluntarily. We had a team of consultants coming in, so parachuting into our organization and telling us, okay, so that's the way. You have to do it. And fortunately, at some point in time, we figured out that that's not the right way to do it. Because in particular during this phase, there was a lot of anxiety. And people were very worried about, okay, Jesus, what's going on? Will I have a job tomorrow? And it almost paralyzed our organization. So we decided, okay, we have to do it ourselves. We cannot trust these consultants. And by the way, I have to remove this from the recording. So we put together a team of IT managers, people who were already in management responsibility, but also people who were not, and redid it. We revisited basically the recommendations the consultants came up with. And I would say at the very end, to the credit of the consultant team, we had to agree, and we had to recognize that they were right. The transformation to a more global function and the creation of what they refer to as service centers was or still is the right thing to do. But it was a very, I would say, a good thing to do for us and a very healthy exercise, because now this idea, this understanding, came out of our own organization. It was not somebody from the outside telling us, okay, you have to do this and this. It was really ourselves that had this epiphany. Now, this is the new organization, and we basically what we did is we turned the whole model upside down. And how drastic this is, I can demonstrate to you very easily. If you expect me to talk for the next 45 minutes from the front of the room, just imagine that I will continue my presentation from the back of the room. And if I please can ask you to look at me, then all of a sudden, this puts all of you into a very unpleasant position, right? I mean, if you imagine that you have to sit this way and we go through the next 45 minutes in this setting, then that's nothing you would like. And since I want you to fill out good feedbacks for this presentation, I probably better move back to the front. So, but it's important for me that you understand that the challenges that we were facing at the time were not comparable with the next exchange rollout or any technical change. An organizational change is much different. An organizational change affects people. And we've heard the presentation from Doug yesterday. When it comes to people, it also comes to resistance. And a lot of our problems had to do with resistance to change. But we cannot blame our people. We have to blame ourselves, the managers. And when it comes to change, and it comes to people, and it comes to managers, it comes to the devil. And all of a sudden, you as a manager are seen as the devil. And people don't trust you at all. And that's something you have to recognize. I'm not sure who of you attended last year's conference and had the pleasure to hear Stan Slapp talking about culture in organizations. And that it's very much up to you as a manager, as a leader, but certainly also as a member of the team to make sure your culture can deal with these changes. And if you haven't heard this presentation, I highly recommend that you try to get the audio recording. If you can't find it anywhere, shoot me an email and I can send you the MP3. Again, something I have to remove from the recording. Now, what you see here also is a bit of an inconsistency when it comes to Asia Pacific. We had, coming out of this global transformation, an applications director, an IT service director, an infrastructure director, and a director for Asia Pacific, being still responsible for both IT service and infrastructure. And in Asia Pacific, we had very little to do with applications. Now, this inconsistency in the model was something we had to put in simply because of the reality that we are facing in Asia Pacific. There are a lot of small offices. They are spread out over a large gap in terms of time zones. They have about 6 hours time differences. They have a lot of different languages, but also because the cost of labor is different, the whole business works a bit different. So we try to address this and recognize and acknowledge this by still having one director for the region. And this is a kind of shared reporting line here. But I just want to make you aware that if you think about a global transformation, and if you think about an organizational structure that helps you to run your organization over the next 5-10 years or so, then you also have to be creative and you have to acknowledge the realities that you are facing. Now, we are coming from an environment where we have a partnership. And that's probably, from my perspective, one of the toughest environments you can operate in. Because a partnership means you have 300 people who feel they have to have a vote in the decision. So we have 300 partners all over the world. We then have regional chairs, and we have an executive committee. And these people are making the decisions. Now, the challenge we are facing also is just because the executive committee in our organization thinks something is the right thing to do doesn't mean that any local office or business unit also agrees with this. And where the rubber hits the road is in a local office. So we had to do in the past, and we still have to do a lot of selling of this idea. And I would say the second thing we underestimated next to people issues and how people would receive this is the amount of selling, the amount of communication. And this certainly then also has to do with how people understand or how much people understand from this transformation. So the more you talk about it, the more you sell it, not just to the business, but also to your people, the easier this transformation is. So we put together several presentations. And I also attended yesterday Terry's presentation about the 9 biggest presentation mistakes. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, oh my God. I have 28 slides. how will I make it through the day? And then it dawned me, and it hit me, and I thought, Jesus, I don't use these slides in the way of conveying content and tell you something. This is actually a presentation about a presentation. And this is my kind of way to weasel out of this dilemma. These are the slides that we used when we talked with our managers in the local offices, our partners. We also used several of these slides, if not all, to explain the idea to our staff. And so don't take this so much as something you have to read. You have it all in the pre-read material. You can download the presentation, so please don't read this stuff. But I want you to know and understand how we structured this and how we basically explained it to our people. Also for me, certainly it's a hint to tell you what we actually did. So the ultimate outcoming out of this analysis was that we had to establish service centers and central support units in Europe, and there we already had a small hotline servicing Germany and Paris, but we also needed a center in the Americas. And at the time, we still don't feel that it's the right time to have such a central support unit in Asia. Again, for the same reasons that I already mentioned before, we have a highly distributed organization there. But the idea is to start with two service centers first in the Americas and in Europe. And by end of 2006, we will revisit the situation in Asia. And hopefully, at some point in time, we will be able to move to follow the sun support. That's our kind of ultimate goal and probably the next evolutionary step. Speaking of evolution, we, in our organization, have a tradition of doing everything in an evolutionary way. We're very warm and fuzzy people. Also to the outside, sometimes we have to present very cold messages. But inside, we are very warm, disorganized sometimes. So at times, we're in the inside, everything we don't people to the outside they should do. So it's like the traffic sign that leads the way. It doesn't walk the way. It only has to point you to the right direction. So that's my way to explain why a consultant company internally has these struggles with organization. We put so much energy into providing service to our outside clients that we sometimes forget that they're also as an inside, and we also have to take care of our own organizational structure. So having said that, we try to do this transformation in a way that doesn't hurt people. We don't want to fire anybody, but certainly also one goal of this transformation is to gain efficiency. And gaining efficiency means saving money. And saving money, bottom line, means in a service business that you have to do the same amount of work with less people. Or the way we are reading it, we have to do more work with the same amount of people. And that's the way we're trying to do it. Now, the problem we were facing there is that since the downturn in 2000, and in particular with all the scandals in the consulting industry, our business was no longer growing. For years and years and years, our business was growing by 10, 15%. And in 2000, when we had to get our act together and getting ready for this transformation, there was all of a sudden no growth anymore. Certainly also one element that triggered this whole transformation. But we still believe in this model, and we still believe that with natural attrition, we can outgrow our current capacity and basically transform in a more or less painless way. So basically, we keep the people in place. Some got new jobs. For some, the role changed. Some moved up into management positions. Others are still doing the same job. But we feel that over the next 2 years, we can fully complete this transformation without having laid off anybody. Now, of course, we had layoffs very small numbers in the past, but these were the same numbers we've seen over years and years in the past. And most of them had to do with either performance issues or that people really didn't fit into this new model, and they didn't want to change. So we had this goal of doing it in a painless way. But as I was talking of the devil, when you tell your staff about this and you tell them there will be no forced attrition, what your staff is thinking then is, okay, so there's no forced attrition and you want to do this change anyway. So probably you will make life so miserable here that I will leave voluntarily. So it's really amazing how creative people become when they want to blame you, that or when they just don't want to accept that you're doing your best and trying to play fair. So this is, but that's human nature. So at the very end, we can't blame them. It's just the way it works. So we are growing, and this slide tries to explain our situation and how our IT business works and the kind of problems we are facing. And it's a very simple truth that this slide basically presents. It tells you that if you look at the IT ratios and the service ratios, so IT staff per total staff, so that's basically how many users we support per agent or per IT specialist, and we look at the size of our business units or offices, then the more users you support, the more efficient you become, right? So if you today support, let's say, 100 users, and then your location or your business unit is growing, and tomorrow you have to support 120 users, naturally you become more efficient because you have to. You have no choice. And this slide doesn't tell us anything more. So it's a very simple truth. But it helped us to recognize where we had our opportunities. Because where we had offices on the left side, we were running low ratios. But we knew that because we are growing today, fortunately, again, by 10 or 15%, offices naturally will move up this chart. And they will move further to the right. So they will naturally become more efficient. It also told us that where we see the red circles here on this slide number 6, we have opportunities. We have people who have time at hand. They are sitting in local offices, providing local support, desk-side support, and they are, to an extent, underutilized. Or, and that's also very important, they are maybe doing the wrong things. Maybe they are busy, but they are still only supporting 20 people. But they are busy running around replacing toner, taking care of whiteboards, LCD projectors, all this kind of stuff, low-value IT tasks. So part of the analysis that we did on slide number 8, you can see, it's basically trying to understand where do we spend our time. And of course, we did this in greater detail than you can see on this slide, but it gives you an idea how you can look into your own organization. And also, if you benchmark within your own organization, I mean, that of course depends on your size and if you really have either different locations or different business units or anything that allows you to benchmark, it gives you a great opportunity to identify the best in class. And one of our goals is, and at the time also was, to identify the best in class and to share this. Because if one office is doing something better, and if one office in our organization is able to run at ratios of, let's say, 1 to 48, because they are not providing any of the low IT tasks, and there's another office that runs at ratios of 1 to 37 or so, because they are doing something wrong, they are taking care of things they shouldn't, then this allows us also to explain to our business that it is possible. It does mean that there are offices that are doing a better job and they still have a good life. So it's It's not that it's something that you can't do. And this is very, very important when you have to implement changes coming out of this analysis. Because if you have to go to a local office or a business unit or a department, and you have to tell them, sorry, but IT is no longer replacing your toner cartridges, you have to do it your own, or we have to find a better way doing this, then it is very helpful if you can point to departments where it's actually working, where they replace their toner cartridges themselves, or where they have it outsourced, or where they have some other better solution. So how many of you are facing this problem that you're getting caught in low-value IT tasks? Okay, good. So maybe you want to look at how you're doing this and what are the opportunities really to give these tasks to either other units or having maybe temp staff doing it or having it outsourced. There have to be smarter ways to do it because not everybody here raised their hands. So that also has to tell us something. Another way we looked at it were by identifying opportunities for standardization. And we pretty much try to understand where are we efficient and where are we standardized? And is it maybe helpful to standardize in certain areas? And the way our organization works is because we have, we rely very much on local support, we don't have a problem with our desktops being different in different locations. Because the local people know the desktops. They know what to do. They know the firmware. They know the models. They know the vendors. And whether we are using Compaq in the US or HP or IBM's in Europe or vice versa, doesn't really matter for us. That's not so much a problem. What was really a problem for us in the past was that we didn't use all the same laptop model. And that hit us because our users are traveling users. So when they show up coming from Chicago and they go to the Düsseldorf office or Cologne or Munich or elsewhere, and all of a sudden they cannot receive support, then this really hurts. It hurts the user, and ultimately also it hurts us in IT. So that was a way to looking at other opportunities. And also this allowed us to make the case in certain areas that we have to standardize. And we can only standardize if we move to a more global view of the world. You cannot standardize if you have a local view of the world, because then all your standardization is a local standardization. Now, I mentioned that we rely heavily on local support. And that means that the way our organization works is we have people in local offices owning IT. They are the local guys that help you when you have a computer problem, and they help you in all aspects of IT. So whether you have an application problem or your hard disk crashed or you need a new mouse or whatever it is, they give you the introduction when you join our company, and they take away your computer when you leave our company. So a lot of innovation in our organization is coming from these people. And the way we look at our staff is that we have new joiners in IT, and this is on slide 10. We have new joiners, and they are pretty much inefficient. So they need a lot of attention, and they have to be trained. And it takes them probably 2 years or so to perform at a level of 100%. So to be fully, I would probably better have to say, effective in their job. Now, a number of them actually exceed our expectations. And not only do they do their day-to-day job, but they also are creative and innovative. They go out on the internet and find this great new product that helps us to serve our clients better. They come up with new ideas about how we can do our processes even better and how we can serve our customers even better. And we want to leverage these experts, and we want to tap into their expertise. And when you streamline your organization, you have to be very careful that you don't kill this potential. Because if you get so streamlined that your people get so stretched out that they don't have an opportunity to be innovative and to be creative, then your organization is dead. Then you are just doing your day-by-day job. You are just doing maybe what you got started with out of maybe such an analysis, and then you stop. You stop learning because your people don't have time to learn. So it's also very important that you express this view to the business, to the people who want to cut your jobs, who want to streamline you so thin that you don't have any way to add value and to improve. So this might be a way for you to explain that, okay, we only need 2.8 FTE, but I need three people, and you need three people anyway, because it's very rare that you find this 0.8 FTE anywhere. But you need to maintain this 0.2, because this 0.2 is the time that people can surf the web, or they can maybe do some online training, or they can just sit there and think about something. They can have a discussion at the coffee machine or whatever it is, but it is important. This slide gives you a bit of an overview. So it's kind of the visual representation of the executive summary. The core of our organization is the service center and the local IT support. We then had to add a third element that we refer to as shared staff. So these are basically third-level experts that we want to share across offices, across regions, or even on a global level. So these are people who have a high level of expertise. They are experts in their field. For instance, they design our client image, or they take care of a vendor relation. For instance, we're using Connected Backup. And we have people who are owning this product. So they are experts. They are the link. When something goes wrong in a local office, then the local people know who to call. And we couldn't get rid of the last level. So we still have managers, and we also still have a director.
Christoph?
Yep.
Got it. You want questions now?
Yes, please.
The top level there, the service center, those were the two regional centers that you talked about?
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes.
And they have all, like in your Europe center, because I noticed you were going to review Spanish and Italian, but you had locations in Scandinavia and in Eastern Europe.
Yep.
So did you bring those people down, or did you leave them in place and just route calls, or how did you handle the language issue there?
Yeah, the language barrier is less of a problem with the Western European countries. So the Nordics, certainly the native speakers, like our London office, will receive English support. In the other countries, it's also less. When it comes to our consulting staff, it's not a problem at all because they all speak perfect English. When it comes to our internal support staff, admin staff, then this is a problem. So we're providing native French support, and it was a long discussion, what should we do with the Iberian offices and with Italy? And the way we are approaching it is that we will offer to them English-speaking support, and they can tap into it on a sort of as-needed or as-wanted basis. We will not force them to do this. And we also will keep the local support. And I guess one element, one evolutionary element in this exercise here in the implementation is that we do not want to force our users. We want to convince them, at least in the first step, by providing really a high level of service and a good service quality in the service centers so that they keep calling. In the introduction of the call center or service center in Germany about 5 years ago, we forced them to call the service center. And they couldn't call, they were not allowed to call their local guys. And it was a very bad decision on our part. And that had to do with our company culture and our user expectations. It doesn't mean that it doesn't work in your organization, but we couldn't do it. So we want to convince people through performance to keep calling. Another view of how we looked at our organization was, and the opportunities was, what can we do to provide remote or local support and to do it in a more efficient way. And we decided that there are certain tasks that can be shared, there are certain tasks that can be provided or done remotely, and there are certain tasks that should remain local. And this is kind of explanation of our findings here. Slide number 13 is a pretty simple slide that tells you the different elements of our support structure. The call center is a kind of first-level support. So the service center takes the calls, and in best case, they take all the calls. And if they can't resolve it, then our second-level support is basically the local support. On the management side, we try to form a global management team in the IT service organization. So it's very important for us that our local, regional, or sub-regional managers talk with each other. They meet on an almost quarterly basis, and it's one of my sort of high priority to-dos and tasks to facilitate or to be a facilitator to this team and to make sure that these people work together. Because if you work in a local organization, you still have your subunits and you still have to manage the organization in general. So you have to make sure that the next management level talks with each other. And when the guy in Paris has a problem, I want him to be able to call the guy in Chicago and that they talk with each other and that it's for them a natural process.
So under 40 meetings, are they
face-to-face? The meetings are face-to-face, yes. But we also, in addition, we have biweekly phone calls where we discuss more operational issues. This talks again to the service center and the question earlier. Slide 15, we have these two phases of implementation. We want to convince people in the first step, and certainly at some point in time, you have to be a bit more forceful, because if they still don't get it after a certain amount of time, you have to remind them, and you have to point them to the service center. So the first phase is introducing this as an added service, and the second phase is really also to remind people more and to ask them really actively and to point them actively to the service center. When they call local IT, we want then the local guys to point out, okay, have you actually tried to call the service center? And this is our way to introduce this service. Of course, it's also important when you make the switch and all of a sudden you force all your users to call the service center, then this is a pretty big change. So you also have to be able to carry the workload there and the call volume. And for us, actually, it's a good thing that we move step by step and we move office by office. So we take on more offices. We started with Germany, Paris next. Now we have worked with Zurich, Vienna, and the next step will be then the English support, London, Nordics, and so forth. In parallel, also we are now working on the implementation plan for the Americas. And that's one element, for instance, where the people issues sort of forced us to move slower than we actually had planned. Initially, we had expected and planned to have the America Service Center already up and running today. And this is something where we've got probably about half a year delayed or so. This had to do with selling the plan to the business, getting the support of the local management and the local people, and so forth. So you have to be careful, and you have to be patient also.
Mm-hmm. Are those cultural differences in relationship to change that's causing that to slow down, or what's really the kind of...
Are the cultural differences sort of impacting the change? Mm-hmm. Sort of? I would say the way people are dealing with change is certainly different in different cultures. I would say naturally... to give credit to everyone from the U.S. here, I would say Americans have a tendency to be more able to accept change as a fact of life. Like Germans, they have a bit of a problem with change, and you have to do a lot of selling and a lot of convincing, and they really have to understand and believe, and also they have to find this one weak spot in your plan. And you have to listen to them, and you have to give them this point before they buy into it. So, there, yes, absolutely. There are different ways of dealing with change by culture. Again, this is a slide we used to sell the idea, or at least to explain the idea. And in particular, probably all you have to look at is that the service center, from our perspective, adds quality, flexibility, and scalability, and the rest are just details that are probably less interesting. What we put a lot of emphasis on was what's actually in for the different stakeholders. What's in for me? And also when I would present any change to you, then immediately the question you ask is, okay, yeah, so that's nice, sounds all good, but what does it mean for me? And what do I gain? And we try to point out for the different entities, the company, the IT organization, but also for the local offices, what does it mean? And this is certainly helpful also in conversations that you have with those different parties in explaining to them what does it mean for you? What will we actually change? The one thing we had to do is calculating the numbers and finding out what does it actually mean in terms of financial implications, how much funding do we need, what's the budget, how many people do we need in the service centers, and so forth. If you download the PowerPoint presentation, it's an embedded object, so you can open it in Excel and then you can look into the details. Whenever you present numbers, or probably you shouldn't even present the numbers, you should turn them into something more graphic and something that people can easier understand. So we had to do both, because you have to make people believe that you actually did the calculations. You probably can any numbers in there, as long as you have the graphs. We did this with the required FTEs, and we also did this with the funding that we needed, and we also turned this into little graphs. And basically, the way we tried to sell it to the business, and the way we sold it to a large degree to the business, is that we explained, if we don't change, what does it mean? And if we change, what does it mean? And what's the difference? It's a little bit what you learn when you go into a shopping mall. Basically, the more you buy, the more you save, right? Yeah, right, go spend. And what you can see on this slide 22 is, you have a certain amount of money that you spend, but you also have a certain amount of money that you don't spend anymore. And you also see that what we are trying to do here costs us money, at least initially, but then sooner or later it saves us money. And that's really the point, that eventually without reducing actively staff, we are able over the next 2 to 3 years to save money. Yeah.
Yep. Are all the service centers you have, are they all using the same ACD system and same ticket tracking system?
Since at this point we only have the European service center and we are still in the planning phase with the Americas service center, we only have this one ACD system. We just purchased a new ACD system, and hopefully we can share it. I mean, that would be a great deal for us and a great relief. So the idea is, yes, if we can share the technology there, absolutely. We also moved in preparation of this rolling out this global organization and maybe at some point in time having this follow the sun support, we standardized on HEAT globally. And we're just in the process of...
We appreciate that.
And I don't want to dive into details of the challenges here, but but it is something. I mean, it is great to see that this global organization really enables us to do something like that. Because before, for years and years, we were using a different product in Europe, and I just made the decision, and I decided, okay, we use this product, not necessarily because it's better, but.
We'll talk. business on Follow the Sun in phase one? That's it.
Yeah, we didn't sell the business on Follow the Sun. It is primarily because the business receives decent, I would say, excellent support locally and regionally. So from their perspective, it's not so much an issue. But from our perspective, we feel that we can provide much better support. It's more a question of efficiency. Because if we don't have to pay somebody in Europe overtime hours because we can handle the call in the Americas during daytime hours, then that's just money we can save. There was another question here. The question was if compliance with SOX was an issue here when we are considering this model for the U.S. And since we are a privately owned company, it wasn't. So we have the luxury of ignoring all this. I mean, of course, because of liability, I mean, standardizing and really following standard procedures is important for us. Business continuity is for us a very big issue. And also, I brought all of my managers to this conference to learn about ITIL and other ways to standardize processes because it is becoming such a big ticket item. Absolutely. So, just another funny chart where we try to explain to the business, this is slide 23, that the local impact is decimal. And you don't have to worry on a local level or business unit level that you get less compared to what you got in the past in terms of support. This is basically the available IT headcount that offices receive, and the white bar shows you how the situation is today. And it also recognizes the fact that headcount or user base in our business units is growing over time. So it also helps us to identify what should we do with offices where we have overcapacity, and to think about where do we have more potential and where do we have opportunities. And of course, with these kinds of charts, you have to be careful because you don't want to scare away anybody. And this is something that requires a lot of explanation, because this guy in office H, I mean, he probably won't sleep tonight if I show it to him today. But if I can have a conversation with him and certainly also have a plan ready, what do we do with you? And what has to change? And it's a great opportunity if you look at it from the right angle.
Mm-hmm.
The training on new technology in the service center is provided in best case by the project team. For instance, we deployed Exchange 2003, and the project team basically wrote an administrator guide, 80-page document or so. Nobody reads it, but since we have recognized this as a problem, we now conduct trainings where we read this guide to our people. So since most of the change in our organization is driven by projects, if not probably that's true in all organizations, you do projects, that's the way you implement change. We basically rely on the project teams to take care of this. You have to present also a plan to your people where they can really see, okay, what's happening today, what's happening tomorrow, and what's happening next week. And slide 24 talks about, there is my screensaver. Slide 24 talks about the sort of timeline of the change. And we were trying again here to point out, what does it mean to the different entities? What does it mean to local offices, to the service center? and also to the global IT organization. Now I come to the probably most important slides and the most important part from my perspective. The next slides all talk about selling the idea to the different stakeholders. And you cannot underestimate the amount of work that you have to put into this. It's probably 80% of this project that goes into selling the idea, talking about it, getting funding, convincing people, getting their buy-in, getting them on board. And you have to follow different strategies for the different entities and the different parties. You have to sell it differently to management and to the business than selling it to your people. And what we did during this whole process, and I would think this is something we have the right to be proud of, is that our CIO followed the most open communication possible. And we tried to tell our people at every point in time where we are in the process, when we developed the plan, but certainly also in the implementation. Now, despite all efforts, you never can do enough. And you always have to recognize that there are people who feel uninformed. And I think that's just a fact in life. But we try to have open calls. We have to we try to tell them where we were, even if we didn't make any progress. And sometimes when you have to move from point A to point B, you know that eventually you want to arrive at point B, but it is very difficult for your people to understand that you don't know what's between A and B. And that's, by the way, also another great point that came up in Stan Slab's presentation. It's this gap and how to bridge this gap. And sometimes, as a manager, you have to admit that you simply don't know. Now, if you tell your people in a conference call or at a meeting that you don't know, then that's a problem, because it can question your leadership. It can make people feel, okay, they already know it. They just don't want to tell us. So that is something that requires a lot of sensitivity, and it also requires a lot of convincing. But you have a choice. You either can fully develop the plan and then pop it out of your head, and there it is, and that's what we would do. And then you have the problem of selling it to people even more. Or you can make people part of the process, but then you have to admit that at certain points you just don't know. And when you talk to management and to the business, it's always good to also talk about the risks. You cannot sell this idea and not talk and think about the risks, because the next moment somebody asks a question, okay, so what do we do if nobody calls? What do we do if because of cultural differences, people just don't call the service center? Because we are here following an evolutionary approach, it's less of a risk for us, because we still can rely on our local support. But depending on the way you try to implement your change or plan to implement your change, you might have to give a different answer. And then you better also have an answer and a plan B ready for when it doesn't work. When we sold the idea to staff, as I already mentioned, we followed the most open communication approach possible. In the implementation phase, there comes a point when you deal with people, maybe that's a German in me, where you simply have to tell them, we do it. And we had all the conversations and discussions, and we made this decision, and now it's really time to execute. At some point in time, you have to stop talking, and you have to start walking. And if you don't do this, and you re-engage in these discussions, then you really display weakness. And that's the biggest mistake, I would say, you can make when you lead such a transition, is not being firm when it comes to execution. Of course, you can't be blind, and you have to look at the reality And you also have to have checkpoints when you revisit your plan. And when you see it doesn't work, you have to admit failure. You cannot somehow cover it up or so. And it is something that you have to face. But when you start and when it's time to do it, you just have to make it happen. When you sell the idea to customers, you also have to communicate a lot, because such a change requires also a behavioral change on side of your customers. So the experience we made is, regardless how early you involve them, they always feel that you didn't talk with them early enough. So you cannot involve them early enough, probably even before you fully develop the plan. We encountered a lot of pushback when we were trying to sell the idea of the service center here in the Americas initially. And that was probably first and foremost because we, namely I, didn't do a good job in contacting people early enough and reaching out to people. So this is something where you have also, again, where you have to be very sensitive and where you have to do a lot of work, a lot of traveling, depending on your structure. You have to spend a lot of time on the road selling the plan, calling up people, and tell them about what you're trying to do here. Again, when it's time to execute, you have to engage. And you have to be 100% behind your idea. If you don't believe in what you're trying to do, then you will lose. So you have to plan and you have to be thorough. But when it's time to do it, you really have to do it. If you don't believe into what you're trying to accomplish 150%, then no one in your team is going to believe in such a plan. You have to lead the way. And you have to be there for your people. And you have to tell them, and they have to believe in you, that you will be there for them. And I would say that's probably the most important piece of this presentation, that when you have done the planning work and you have worked with your people, you've worked with your stakeholders, it's time to do it. You have to be there, you have to be present, you have to make them believe that this is the right thing to do. Certainly you have to believe it yourself. If you don't believe in such a change, such a fundamental organizational change and transition, then you better don't start it, because you will never arrive at the other end. So one of my favorite quotes is what Yoda told young Skywalker is, when it's time to do it, just do it. Do it or not do it. There is no trying. And with this, I come to an end of the formal presentation. I would like to ask you to fill out the feedback form. And while you're filling out the feedback form, we also strategically placed a couple of forms in the audience here in case you didn't bring your booklet with you. There are also forms at the exit. I would like to take further questions.
You've got a support center and you've got a local staff. So how did you get the resources for your support center?
We followed an approach where the question is, where did we get the resources for the service center?
Right.
And we followed an approach where we hire 80% external people for the service center. We are working with an outsourcing partner. We don't believe that our internal staff is the right staff to work at the service centers. It's just a different kind of job. It's providing some support 100% through the phone. So we go look at the outside, and we follow an 80-20 mix here. So 80% of the service center staff is external. 20% of the service center staff is our own BCG, Boston Consulting Group staff. And that works quite well. It helps us to bridge a lot of problems and a lot of gaps in the communication. It kind of brings them in. Also, despite the fact that the service center is 80% outsourced, they are sitting within a BCG office. So we make them part of our culture. We don't have them somewhere sort of off the beaten path in some remote location.
Okay. I have a question about that. So then they're in the office, the 80% external, but are they managed by the outsource company or are they managed
The question is, how is the service center staff managed? We have a team leader from the outsourcing company, but we also have a service center manager. And I would say the majority of the management is done by BCG staff. And the service center manager is part of my management team. So we try to inject the service center there in every single project, because that's very important to facilitate the communication process. Yeah. Okay. The question is, when we have follow the sun support, how do we handle then language problems? And I would say the service center is probably most frequented in those kind of situations by our consultants. And fortunately, they are all capable of speaking English, so they can articulate their problems in English. So the primary language for remote support in follow the sun scenario in our situation would be relying on the English language. Okay.
You said that you still have local support where end users can call if they're comfortable. Is that person then responsible for opening a ticket and track it, or what's their responsibility?
Yeah. The question is, who's responsible for opening the ticket when a user contacts local support? In our situation, local support is responsible for opening the ticket. So they are all using our ticketing system. Of course, the most tickets are opened by the service center. And naturally, it's more incorporated in their workflow than it is incorporated in the local IT support's workflow. And we have to push people pretty hard to make it happen. Any more questions?
Where does incident ownership reside until the ticket is resolved?
The question is, where does incident ownership reside? When you contact local support, and that's why most of our users naturally prefer to contact local support, in reality, the incident ownership, the problem ownership, resides with the local guy. But I would say, on a more formal basis, when we have to escalate a problem to our infrastructure group or to one of our specialists, then this person, according to the workflow in the ticketing system, then owns the ticket, and they also close the ticket. But naturally, because of it, it's very much relationship-based in our situation, naturally the local IT support guy has a vast interest to make sure that this problem gets resolved. So it's mixed. It's certainly one area where we have to improve our process definitions. More questions? Yep.
For your outsource component of your service center, what are the performance metrics you hold them to? What do you expect them to deliver?
What are the performance metrics for the service center? The performance metrics is, I would say, at the moment, first and foremost, first call resolution rate. And we want to make sure that they resolve as many calls as possible in the first contact with the user. We are in the process of sort of refining the metrics. And the problem, the phase we are in at the moment is we've encouraged all of our staff to use the ticketing system. We are currently in the phase we are ramping up the number of tickets that are logged, in particular by local support. And I would say we are now entering a phase where we have enough reliable information that we can dig deeper into this data and really come up with more intelligent reports and metrics. And that's something the management team is currently working on.
Question about your metrics. Mm-hmm. The resolution rate, do you advocate including all calls in your resolution rate, or do you only include those calls for which it is possible to have?
The question is, does it make sense to include all calls when you calculate the resolution rate, or just the calls where it's actually possible to find a solution. At the moment, we count all calls because the resolution rate is about how many problems of our users can we actually solve. And if we, at the very end, if we have to find out there's this 5% baseline of calls that we can never solve, then it displays that there is an inherent problem in your organization. I mean, there is something wrong. Users have a problem, and they consider it a problem. At least it's worth to call the help desk, and you cannot provide a solution. Then maybe it's a communication problem. Maybe it's a problem how you manage expectations. Maybe it's a technological limitation.
A follow-up question to that would be, are you considering in that mix problems only or requests? Questions?
Yeah, the question is
absolutely everything that comes in.
Yeah, the question is what is an incident and where does a request start and do we recognize all of these? At the moment, yes, we do recognize all of these, but there is a desire, in particular within the local support staff, to get better information and more specific sort of guidelines when they have to log a call. So pretty much where we are at the moment is we told our people, okay, you have to use the damn ticketing system, and you have to log every single call. But of course, this is not the ideal solution. One last question. Yep. Yep. The question is if we have a knowledge base that we share, and at the moment we don't, but I would love to have one, and we
your phone's gonna ring.
Yes, that's also something that we see in the next phase. So once we have data, we certainly will utilize the ticketing system and its functionality. We have the technical capability, but we are not using it at the moment. So we can continue the discussion offline. I just want to release the majority of the audience. Thank you very much.